Welcome to Speak in Flow, the podcast that helps leaders like you unlock the power of your voice, achieve maximum potential and flow through exceptional communication. I'm your host, Melinda Lee, and I am passionate about helping company leaders and their teams master public speaking, pitching with impact, and stepping into their full leadership potential. Thanks for tuning in to the Speak in Flow podcast, which is the top 10% of podcasts worldwide. When you stick around until the end, I have an exclusive gift just for listeners only, something that will immediately help you and your team up-level your communication. Let's dive in. Welcome, dear listeners, to the Speak in Flow podcast. I'm so glad you're here today because we're going to share a very unique perspective on communication so you and your team can achieve maximum potential and flow even during the high-stakes, complicated world that we're in. I have an amazing go-to-market executive. He scaled companies 2.5 times, and he's going to tell us what that means. He's worked at large companies such as Salesforce, WeWork, LinkedIn. He's Robin the Ryan Reynolds of B2B Daniels. Hi, Robin.
Hey, Melinda. That's quite so the funny. Opening.
I love it. Well, you deserve it. There's so much more on your profile and your resume, but let's just start off with like 2.5 times the IPO. What is that?
Well, so an IPO, of course, is when you take a company public, and it's kind of a milestone in somebody's career, but also in the company history, because it kind of means that you've made it. And I like to joke that I have 2.5 of those under my belt. The first one was with Box back over a decade ago, but I wasn't the CMO back then. And then I did one. Then I went to a company a couple of years later called WeWork, and I was so close to the IPO. I mean, I came in, the company was scaling and growing like crazy. Then we were going to plan an IPO. I was even at NASDAQ with the WeWork team planning the IPO. And then like a week, 10 days later, it all fell apart. It was very painful. But then there was a redemption in there, because then the next company I went to, Matterport, basically 2 years later, nearly to the day, I went public with Matterport at NASDAQ. It was a very emotional moment for me actually being at NASDAQ now as the chief marketing officer, taking the company public, being there, ringing the bell, you know, getting the kudos. Because I've been so close just 2 years before, you know, and it's like, so 2.5 times, you know, better late than never. You guys just keep grinding it out. Yeah.
And some execs never even do it. Some never even get the chance to. So congratulations on your efforts. It shows your leadership, your marketing skills, your team building skills. So I'm so excited to dive in. And there's also the Ryan Reynolds of B2B. What does that mean for you?
Well, I'm a huge fan of communications that are emotional, authentic, fun, different, you know? And I always, even though I've only worked for B2B companies my entire career, Salesforce, LinkedIn, Box, WeWork, you name it, I've always had the North Star that I want to communicate and market like a B2C company. And I think one of the we live in this age of I think personal branding in many ways, where people don't just want to connect with the brand, but also with the people behind the brand. And I think Ryan Reynolds has just done a phenomenal job of coming across as fun, authentic, quirky, different. I know, of course, a lot of he works hard at it, so it's not like it's all just off the cuff, but just the way he's able to tell a story and communicate is second to none. And I feel like there's so much inspiration that I get from watching him that I'd like to think of myself, or at least aspiring to be, the Ryan Reynolds of B2B.
Yeah, no, and I think that that's a beautiful leadership skill to identify with someone and learn from someone, be inspired by someone. And sometimes when we are leaders or someone that doesn't feel like we have that skill, not to say that you don't, but I'm just saying I teach my students or my clients, hey, who is that person that you aspire to be? Like, channel that person. That means you have parts of you in there, right? To step into. So that's amazing that you do that. And I mean,
I've heard that he's also thinking about becoming the B2C of Robin Daniels. So maybe there's like, we can swap a little bit, you know, that way.
In a day. So you're so fun and engaging and dynamic. I love that. And we're going to talk about how to bring that communication into marketing, into leadership. But before we get there, it's like, you have this drive in life. You have this passion to do, you know, to fulfill a sense of purpose. Like, where does that come from?
Yeah, it's really comes a lot from my childhood, honestly. I grew up in Denmark, which is a very nice country, but I grew up to like two very idealistic hippie parents who were very dysfunctional. They got divorced when I was pretty young. They were always kind of struggling financially. They were struggling to kind of find their way in life in many ways. And I saw and I learned a lot from them, don't get me wrong, but also I think a lot of times from your parents, you'll also learn what not to do, or you kind of take the opposite approach. And I just thought to myself, I never wanted my life to be that chaotic or that dysfunctional in many ways. I wanted certainly to have the joy of impact and purpose, which I think they had. They really believed that they were doing something that mattered. But I also wanted to do it in a way where I wasn't always struggling, where I actually had the freedom to go kind of choose the life that I wanted to live. And so I could have more impact in the world around me. And so I think in many ways, when I think about my parents, and again, God bless them, I don't know if they ever fully lived up to the potential that they had the vision they had of themselves in the world. But it's not for lack of trying. I think they certainly tried. And I've tried to learn from that, like, how can I learn everything, all the skills that they gave me, but add to it? You know, not take away from it, because I think there's a lot of benefit in what they taught me, but also around how can I then escalate that and elevate it so I become better? And I'm trying to do the same for my son. I have an 18-year-old kid now, and I'm trying to think about how do I make sure that he takes that even further, you know, in some ways.
Oh, he's very lucky to have you, and thank goodness for your parents to create the person that you are. And thank you for like taking that. Sometimes people will be mad or have, resentment toward their parents, and you took the opposite approach of what can I learn, what can I elevate and adopt into my life. So congratulations on that. And obviously it's worked, you're very successful, and then you're also taking bits of, having fun, having purpose in your communication. And so share a little bit about how do you stretch yourself with regard to communication. How do you make it different? How do you make it fun? What does that mean to you?
Well, so I'll tell you the secret behind how I got really good at it. And I think I'm still learning, but I feel like I've over the last 2 decades or so really kind of become very good at this art of it. And it's because of deep failure. So when I was 21, I moved from Copenhagen to California. I bought a one-way ticket. I didn't have a job or a place to stay. I didn't know anybody, but I always wanted to go. And the first year was tough because I came right as the dot-com explosion happened, right? Everything was starting to crash and companies were laying off people and shutting down. So this first year was tough. Two jobs that didn't really go anywhere. I ended up then going to a company called Veritas in Mountain View, California, that was a little bit bigger, doing well, a little bit more stable, and ended up staying there for many years. But in the second month of me being in that job, I was hired as a junior product marketing manager. I was 22 at the time. I was asked by my boss to go to Orlando, Florida, to go speak to our sales team and present, an update on our messaging and community and positioning and around our product and so on. So I flew out there, and the presentation was so horrible. Like, I was so nervous about standing in front of like these 300 grizzled salespeople who were really like been in the company a long time, lots of opinions, much older than me. And I was so nervous. I was shaking. I had sweat pits under my arms. My voice was not good. And I was kind of like looking at the screen the whole time. I even had some people come up to me afterwards saying, "Are you okay?" You know, like, something has not gone well when people come up and ask you that question after a presentation. It was horrible. But I also then said to myself afterwards, never again. I never want to have this experience again. So I went on this journey over the next couple of years to try to really level up my ability to communicate, because I could see what a superpower it could be. If you can communicate well, the people who do that well, leaders in all forms, they just end up rising to the top. So I went on this journey. I read books, I went to classes, took courses around it. But the biggest thing I did, I would say, of all the things that I tried to kind of throw myself into, I went and took acting classes. I took acting classes at Stanford and at Berkeley, these evening classes that they would offer, these weekend or evening classes. Because I've always admired actors' ability to tell a story that's both interesting but also emotionally engaging. And I always wanted to be the kind of presenter or communicator that both was informative but also entertaining. And I think the magic is in those two. You can have a presenter who's really entertaining, but if they're not informative, you might enjoy it in the moment, but you won't retain a lot of it. And you might have a lot of presenters I see who are really good at what they do. They know their shit, but they're so boring, and you're just like, oh, it's the worst, right? So I've always felt like if I can marry the two elements of in information and entertainment in some way by using my voice, my body, the way I communicate, the way I walk, and so on. That will make at least the message stick a little bit more and make me able to communicate and kind of resonate with people in a way that's authentic to me. But I would say it came, I mean, like most things in life, it came from a deeply unpleasant experience. And so I've over the last couple of decades, really tried to refine that and get better and better and continue practicing. Fast forward to when I joined WeWork as the chief marketing officer. On my 19th day at the company, I was asked to go speak in front of 10,000 people. I was so nervous about this. I'd never spoken in front of 10,000 people before. I had barely been with the company. Like, how am I to stand up there and talk about the message and what we're going to do? And I was super nervous, but I rehearsed my presentation over and over and over and over again, maybe over 50 times in front of the mirror, in front of a small group of people. But it meant that when I walked into that stage in LA, I just kind of had it into my bones and I just nailed that presentation. And it ended up being one of the better ones I think I've done. But it comes from that, both a little bit insecurity, but also the need to always like think about, this is not something that you just always have. You've got to continually refine it and practice and practice and practice.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I can relate to you. I've been there. I know the pain and the embarrassment and the shame you get from wanting so bad to do well. And when it doesn't, it's like, I'm better than that. But at the same, but that's what drove you to refine it. That's what drove you to, kudos to you, to go take the acting classes. I love those. I take impromptu classes. They're amazing. It helps you think on top of your feet. But acting also helps you step into some emotion, tell a story that is a way that it's engaging.
I did the monologue from Jerry Maguire. That was my final assignment. I had to do that in front of the whole class, right? You know, and this was at Stanford. I did the Jerry Maguire monologue when he's in the locker room with Cuba Gooding Jr. You know, I am out here for you. You don't know what it's like being me out here. Like that whole monologue, it's just so great. Like just like
his emotion
about it, but it's like, but you have to be very vulnerable. I mean, it's super hard to stand in front of a class of like so many people and do all that. But
but it's that vulnerability again that brings people in. So for you to step into that and feel that like as a as somebody else, if you need to do that, but that's what is motivating and engages people. And well, congratulations also on your big presentation at WeWork in front of 10,000 people. The repetition, the practice, like you said, you're not born with it. We're many of us, majority of us are not born with the skill. So it does require the repetition until you feel it into your bones and in your body.
Yeah.
I love that analogy because it's not in your head. It's like more about feeling it until you feel the words that you're saying and you can bring in that energy with it. Yeah.
I learned also from when I turned 35, I set myself the goal to run my first marathon. And I did it when I was living in San Francisco, and it was so hard and it was really awful. But it also, I think, teaches you a lot about yourself, because this repetition you do when you're training for it, it's not actually the marathon itself, because you know that if you do the training, you can show up to the day of the marathon and you'll be fine, right? Because you've done the training for it. But if you miss days because you're sick or you skip workouts, and you're going to be screwed. So it's about just like teaching yourself, like in some ways, that you can get through anything in life as long as you kind of prepare for it in the right way, you know? So. And a lot of that comes from having the courage to like put yourself out there, I think, and repeat something and do something and practice. One of the things I recommend and coach on when it comes to interviewing, a lot of people are interviewing for jobs all the time, especially in a market that's kind of as volatile as it is. And I always say, I know it's deeply uncomfortable, but you should really start rehearsing in front of a mirror. Go like have a dialogue with yourself. And it's super, of course it's weird to do that. And of course
it's uncomfortable. Weird.
But so you're not, when you're in that interview saying things for the first time and you're trying to mumble for the words and it's weird and awkward, like start getting that confidence. You can kind of guesstimate probably the 5, 10, 20 questions they might ask you. So start rehearsing your talk track so it sounds smooth and natural and you have a story behind it. Deeply uncommon. Most people don't do that. And I think that's why a lot of them fall flat in their face.
Yeah. No, practicing in front of the mirror is so important because if you can look at your own self in the mirror and be okay with it, then other people, you're going to allow other people to also see you too. And so going about being uncomfortable, like how do you suggest for your team to stretch yourself to like put out messaging that might be fun, something different.
Yeah.
Like, what are your, because I'm learning this myself. I thought I mentioned to you,
Yeah.
how would I know, okay, this is the messaging. I question myself, should I do this? How do I know? What are your steps? What do you think?
Well, so a couple of things. Number one is, I think a key skill if you want to be successful is courage. It just is. I mean, all successful people have had courage in something that they do. Maybe not in every aspect of life, but in at least some aspects of life. And I think when it comes to marketing or communication or putting yourself out there, a key skill is courage. And so what I tell my teams, and I've been saying this for many years to them, is that I basically think that we as individuals, but also we collectively as a team, we operate at three different levels. We can do tactical things, strategic things, or epic things. And tactical things, you're tweaking and optimizing, you're seeing linear outcomes. Strategic things, you're doing much bigger things, usually require team effort, and you see some linear outcomes from that, some bigger outcomes. The epic things, usually the things when you see exponential outcomes. But the reason why epic is so difficult for most companies, for most individuals, because there's no roadmap to guide you. You're starting to step into the unknown. When you're operating at a tactical or strategic level, usually you have a lot of data or at least some data. When you get to the epic things, there's really no roadmap because it either hasn't been done before or nobody has said it this way before. So by nature, we'll feel uncomfortable. And so I always tell my teams that the way you know that we are onto something that's approaching something maybe epic is when you have that voice in your head that goes, should I do this? Can I do this? What will people think? Is it stupid? Is it like completely idiotic? Will it ruin my career? It's just great, when you have those kind of questions,
yeah,
and you sit with it a little bit,
Okay.
And I always say to my team, when you come present an idea to me, unless I have some of these questions, and if I just go, that's good, it's probably just average, right? If we're honest about it. But if once I go like, God, this is, I don't know about this one, Melinda. This sounds a little dicey. It's probably a good thing,
Right. Well, at least like document them and have them, document them and collect them.
So I would say this is the key like skill behind it. But then the method I use, the way I've kind of think about communications, I never, for example, when it comes to stuff I post, I never do so live. I always write down a bunch of ideas. I have a whole notebook of ideas that I try to work on. And my lens is entertaining, informative, insightful. Does it give somebody a little bit of courage and motivation to think differently about their life or whatever it is, the things that I want to stand for? But I never post live because I always want to make sure that what I put out there is kind of valuable. So I'll write things down, the inkling of an idea in a notepad, and then I'll work on it a little bit and work on it. But it also means that I don't have the fear of sitting down in front of an empty prompt, a blank screen, because I always have a notebook or a collection of stuff that I can like pull from that I can work on a little bit. And I think it honestly, if people are thinking about leveling up their communication skills and externally, especially on like social media and so on, start doing that. It really takes the pressure off to think that you have to be perfect or you have to be brilliant in the moment. This idea that you have to have a brilliant thought every day.
Right.
Break. No, no, nobody
it's
has
too
that,
much.
Right?
Yeah.
Too much.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. So always just like allowing the ideas to flow and jot them
Totally.
down. Yeah.
And I do it when I'm walking mostly or running, you know, and then I just, if I'm running and I have an idea, I pull out my phone or I write down, like, usually, honestly, it's oftentimes just a line that will remind me later to go work on this, right?
Exactly.
So for example, I just wrote a line this morning around the difference between working in a startup versus a big company. That was the prompt. And then I'll go write on it later because I had an idea about what I want to write about, the difference between these two. Right? That was it. And I'll come back to it later and I'll kind of work on it,
Right. But these ideas are so valuable and they usually come when we're not like working. They're jogging,
exactly.
We're washing the dishes. Those are the ideas that are great. And we got to capture those. I mean, probably soon there's going to be some device where we could just go feed it to our phone, but yeah. So,
totally.
Oh my gosh, super fun. So, and I really enjoy that. Those are the brilliant ideas, the epic ideas. I think when we're just most calm, we're relaxed, those epic ideas that will probably stretch ourselves and have epic growth is what you're saying.
And what I always say to my team is, if it works out, I can guarantee two things. It'll change the trajectory of the company forever, and it'll change the outcome of your life forever, because you will be known for having created this brilliant thing. Yes, oftentimes it's a team effort, but there's usually a couple of people who really get the benefit of that. I've seen that so many times here.
Wow.
And the downside is, if it doesn't work out, at least you can say you tried and you had fun, and you probably learned a shitload of things just from trying doing that.
Right.
Because oftentimes we learn a lot, as much from our failures as we do from our successes, of course, right?
Right.
But just this idea, I mean, no matter what happens, if you go for the epic, it's either going to be spectacularly awesome or it's going to be a lot of learning. But I can't see any downside in that. Of course, I'm not advocating for harm or anything where people can get hurt. But if that's the thing, that either is going to succeed spectacularly or fail spectacularly, but at least you try and you learn something.
Yeah.
It's all good. It's all good.
And
go
I
for
feel
it.
Like sometimes the learning is the next best. Like if you tweak it, it's getting information, right? And to evolve into the next, like, evolution of your product or service. I love that.
Totally.
And so, Robin, what I'd like to close off with the final goal. What is that one golden takeaway that you'd like for the audience to remember?
I mean, to me, communication is everything. And I even went as far, when my son was in high school, I volunteered to go give a 2-hour course to all the high school students on how to think about communication skills, because I just think it's the difference in how you actually succeed in life. I've succeeded in some of my jobs because of my communication skills, but I've also honestly failed because I've lacked the communication skills. What to say to a CFO, what to say to a CEO, what to say to my team and motivate them. Like, you can either succeed or fail based on your communication skills. And I would say that the key thing I've learned around, especially as I've gotten become more senior in my career, is that in the absence of information, people will make up their own stories. And so it's your job as a leader to over communicate, you know, what the priorities are, what you're going for, what your North Star, or what give people the clarity. Because actually, if you give people clarity, then it takes a lot of the friction out of work. Then people know what to do. They can have more joy in their work. They can have more purpose because they know what they're working towards. It's very hard, I think, to have a great work environment. It's often like times leads to, I think, toxicity or frustration or friction. If you don't know what you're fighting for, and it oftentimes comes from because you're not clear on what you're trying to achieve. Because, and then what happens is, in the absence of information, people will make up their own stories. So if you're not communicating, people will start making up their own stories about what matters. This is the priority. This is what we should be doing. And so on. And I'm not trying to say I'm an advocate for micromanagement. I think that's the worst thing you can do. But give people the North Star, clarity on what you're trying to do, to achieve. And then most people are smart. They'll go figure out ways to achieve that or come up with plans to achieve that. But if you're not clear on what you're trying to achieve in the first place, you're missing the boat completely.
Right. And they're going to start creating stories. They're going to start creating different things to do, what to do, or motivations of why they're doing what they're doing.
And another way of putting it is, I've learned this also the hard way, is people like good news. Of course they do. And actually, people do really not like bad news. But you know what's worse is no news, uncertainty. Uncertainty. People hate living in a state of uncertainty. I do too. When you just don't know, like, there's, oh, a new boss comes in. Is he gonna like let people go, or is the funding didn't come through, or what's happening with this launch, you know, or what is it that, like, there's so many things. Like, living in this state of uncertainty just freaks people out. And so I think you owe it to people to communicate. Okay, ideally it's great news, of course, or clarity, but even bad news is better than the swirl of uncertainty that can just cause so much angst inside of people.
Right. Or even just the news of, hey, I don't have all the information. I'll get to you right when I need it, when just something so that, their minds are not swirling and thinking about the worst case scenarios. I love that, Robin. That's amazing. Thank you so much for your time, your energy. I had a blast. It was so fun.
We should do this again.
You live out your brand. You live out your brand. Thank you so much for all that you do to bring pleasure, fun, purpose into the lives of the people that are around you. And so really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Kelly. That's so good to see you.
Thank you. Yes, you too. And audience, I trust that you got your golden takeaway and implement them right away. Remember, when you have a chance to communicate, you also have a chance to inspire, to connect, and to make a positive difference in the world. Much love to you. Until next time, see you. I'm your sister in flow. That's a wrap on today's Speak and Flow podcast. I hope that you gained valuable insights to help you communicate with more clarity, connection, and confidence. Before you go, let me ask you this. Can your team communicate your founder story in a way that strengthens relationships and builds your company brand? If not, I've got a tool for you. Introducing, it's an AI founder story creator. This is a tool to help you craft a compelling story instantly that you can share with your team, and therefore your team can share with lots of people, building your brand. Grab this tool. In addition to creating immediately your founder story, you're also going to get one-on-one coaching with me so that we can continue to refine the story so that it's in alignment with your company messaging. Click on the link in the show notes, grab it today, and until next time, keep leading with confidence and courage.